What is going on, crypto family? So today we got Tufi Saliba coming on the show, and I would tell you his title and say that he's this and that of like TOTA and DAIA and all these different companies. But, you know, he's got so many things that he's done in life and so many things that he does currently. I'm not even going to put a title on this guy because I think they held a conference where one of the entire talks at this conference was trying to figure out how much stuff this guy does because he does so much, right? So in this incredibly deep and revealing interview with Tufi, you know, he's an incredible human, right? Entrepreneur, visionary. We cover a ton in this interview, like, you know, his incredible story, his journey in life, not using the traditional financial system, what he's doing for the world, what he hopes others will do for the world, kind of his thoughts and perspectives on so many deep and philosophical issues. This is a must-watch episode. And one last thing before we get into this, please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right, so now that that's out of the way, let's go meet Tufi, and I'll catch you on the other side. What is going on, crypto family? So today we've got Tufi Saliba with us. So this guy is all kinds of blockchain and all kinds of different hats. So it's going to be one of those like WTF, right? What does Tufi do, right? So we're going to find out all about you. It's great to have you on, and I appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for doing all the work for the community. Thanks on behalf of all humanity. I believe I'm a homo sapien and I'm entitled to voice one group, which is me, which can represent hopefully a lot of people.
I appreciate it, man. So God's been good to us. We just love to give back any way we can. We're here to bring value. So it's awesome stuff, man. But we're here to talk about you. So what do you do, man? What, you know, how'd you kind of get into blockchain, crypto, AI? And maybe what's some of your past accolades, you know, maybe some of your education, where you live, where you're from, all that kind of cool stuff.
First of all, to me, crypto means cryptography. And when I actually got into cryptography, was precisely September 22nd, 2001.
So sounds like the day you got a DUI and you'll never forget it.
Exactly. I mean, like there's a major event that happened prior to that kind of, you know, shook me and got me to feel that I don't want us to use our immunity against ourselves, starting by privacy invasion to in the name of security. And the two friends that I was talking to, they said, you know what, the one thing that we feel we can add value is cryptography. Cryptography can help from privacy perspective, from sovereign identity and so on and so forth. And that's back then. I mean, so I'm not in anything for short term, and it's for long term. Since then, I've built 15 startups in my active and open life. I failed 11 times. I succeeded 3 times. Fourth one, which is maybe a success, it became an Intel company. It's still kind of Intel company, but we haven't really exited from that one yet. And then moved on to my 16th, where it's called Privacy Shell. And it's basically, it's more like a startup that has equity in over 70 companies now, whether it is through investments or work or whatnot. And my two co-founders, one of them was like an ex-NASA scientist. At least I call him like the rocket scientist in the house. And that's Dan Tolliver. He's from Alaska. So I don't know anyone else from Alaska too. So this is kind of cool. And the other gentleman, Todd Gebhardt, who was ex-Intel company. He was like the vice chair of Intel security because he managed the company. He used to work in cybersecurity for IBM, and then he got called to run a company called McAfee. So he was the president of McAfee for 11 years until sold it to Intel for, I think, $6.14 billion. So they had a very good exit, which kind of enabled him to start looking at things from the perspective of what are we doing? What are we leaving behind? Word for word, what he said to Dan and I, I'm joining you guys because I became a grandfather and I know what it's like to do something that you want to leave something great to humanity. So, you know, with Privacy Shell, it's basically we were hoping that some of the aspects in the current blockchain would be resolved by others. The first thing a technologist would do is take the lazy approach. The second thing technologists would do, take another lazy approach, and so on and so forth, and keeps going. And then finally, you get to a point where you're like, all right, well, you gravitate towards your unfair advantage. What are you good at? What are you not good at? And you start building things, and we started doing something based on the equation of what if TCP/IP in 1974 enabled a certain version of it that can enable value to be transmitted in a fully decentralized setting. What if? And if we can satisfy that and go back in time, we wouldn't really need to depend on centralized entities that they run ledgers. And then as humanity, we mimicked that centralized entity that uses a ledger to ensure the value is being transmitted from one person to the other, and ended up with a replicated ledger that Deloitte refers to it as a distributed ledger technology, which I kind of say it many times in front of them that there's not a single blockchain out there that is actually distributed. They're all replicated. The blockchain doesn't have to be a ledger, but congratulations, you guys got the third part correctly. It is a technology, you know. So they stopped using DLT now. I haven't seen them using it recently. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is that the intent here, what you're trying to accomplish, is the ability for Homo sapien to treat value the same way we treat oxygen. Nobody manages our oxygen. We don't really depend on a third party to manage our oxygen. And when you work hard for your money, you don't really need to depend on a third party. If they come in to give you a service, they can stay in the service layer. So the intent is about value to be managed at a user-centric setting and not to figure a solution for the ledger. We don't care about the ledger, whether it's going to be a ledger or not. A ledger is a tool that we tried, you know, with mimicking the central system by replicating a ledger, but it doesn't have to be that way. So, you know, that led us into putting some of the work in a placeholder. We call it called Dan. You know, he's my co-founder, and Dan is very, very patient. He's one of those guys where I get lots of those eureka moments in the middle of the night, and I'd call him, and every single time he listens. Now, 9 out of 10 of those, they turn out to be rubbish the next day. But there's always that 1 out of 10 that is worth it for him to get, right? So I call him at 4:15 in the morning, and then he's like, my wife's going to kill me. And he basically still has wife. I mean, I've been
divorced
several times.
You haven't
wrecked it. You know, something's got to give, right? So anyway, let's put a placeholder for that, Tufi. What do you want to call it? So I'm like, I start putting, and we have like all the other engineers, and T for Tufi, D for Dan, and it's taken whatever. And I'm like, okay, let's put the TODA. Then the Israelis next day in the office, they said, what are you guys hiding under Toda? It turns out that Toda in Hebrew means thank you. That kind of triggered me having a reaction. Can I say the exact words that I used? Or is there some sort of sensor? Okay, so I'm like, whatever the fuck we're hiding under Toda, we're going to call it Toda. And we did. So,
thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And it turns out that it means like everything in Spanish for female, and in Portuguese, everything. It's Toda. And then there's so many other reasons. When I was a child, I mean, I grew up in Lebanon in a city that was under threat of massacre without necessarily naming what group or whatnot, but the Israelis rescued us. Not a lot of people know that the Israelis, they rescued a lot of Lebanese and a lot of events. All they think about is like, oh, Israelis fighting Lebanese. Well, that's not true. So it was like an opportunity. I'm like, you know what? If I can do something that is part of the mission of where how I add value to this humanity by sending a message saying Toda to folks that they actually rescued 120,000 people in that city, you know, why not? And another reason, there's Morikazu Toda. Have you heard of that?
I haven't.
All right. So those that they are deep, deep, deep in physics, probably heard of Morikazu Toda. Morikazu Toda is a Japanese physicist, scientist. He built something into the sequence of atoms in the crystal that he called it the Toda chain. And the way the actual Toda chain is structured, if you were to break any part of the sequence, it breaks the entire sequence, and that's back in 1967. And then 1982, it got a lot of, it took off in the physics world, and a lot of people, they started referring to it as the Toda chain. So I like to do things where they can have certain reference to nature, because it makes people to understand it and accept it. You know, when you tell people, hey, human, they're entitled to manage their own money that they've worked for, it becomes like a philosophical debate. But when you compare it to nature, it's like they're entitled to breathe oxygen. They are. And it's just like there isn't anywhere in the world that somebody says like, well, we need to take the oxygen and put this, you know, guard there who can decide whether you can breathe this oxygen or not. It is decentralized the way oxygen goes into your lungs, actually. Even inside your body, there's something called the alveolus capillary protocol. Have you heard of that?
I have.
Cool, man. Amazing. Are you a doctor?
No.
How do you know this? This is awesome.
I've got friends that are doctors.
can I tell the audience what's this all about? Okay. So the alveolus capillary protocol is the mechanism responsible of exchanging the oxygen, you know, molecule, it's an O2 with the carbon dioxide. And it does it in a fully decentralized setting. And literally, as you hear those words, no matter where you are, per second, your lungs are doing billions and billions of those exchanges per second without having your brain to give the permission. And it works every single time.
Until it doesn't. We call that death.
Death, correct. But guess what? I mean, if you were to think of that as a nation who wants to have control over its own people or whatnot, let's say that that's the brain. You want to be the brain of that body. You're the government or whatnot. Please don't attempt to have control over the oxygen intake. It won't work. It works a lot better in a fully decentralized setting. So, you know, that kind of gets into people a little bit better, like from the perspective of philosophical acceptance of what we're trying to accomplish here. So, you know.
I like it. So there's kind of some deep meanings behind Toda. So everywhere you turn, it's just another deep, it's awesome.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
And then for people that, you know, are new to crypto, you know, what's kind of like your 30-second pitch to what Toda will do for them, right? So what is Toda in a nutshell? And speaking in layman's terms, you know, like blockchain related that they would get.
Well, perhaps I can say what it is not first, just to kind of like reduce the barrier of people hearing it. Toda has no ICO, has no coin, has no token, has nothing that can benefit if the listener would use Toda, would know how to or not. There is no way for me or anyone I know that can make money from using it more or less or whatnot. Nothing. It's exactly like this channel that we're using, that is called the internet. If you're able to get into it, nobody gets paid. It is by design built that way. It is purely a network communication protocol that's on the protocol level. It is called Toda/IP. That you can build things on top of it that can be for profit. I am all for profit. You don't want to do things that they're not for profit. You're not sustainable. You want to build things on it. That's great. So, you know, I have a couple of groups that I'm not in liberty to discuss who they are and when they're ready and so on and so forth. So they're building Bitcoin or Toda. They don't know each one knows the other, but they don't know of each other. They're doing that at the same time. They don't even want to. They're just doing it for the test it out. It works phenomenal. Some people that they're doing Ethereum on Toda, they're more vocal about it. Some group that they want to do Litecoin on Toda. And then there's the other projects that they bypass a platform and build directly on it, whether it is like Records on Toda or Toda Q or Mind or Singularity, which is something that is coming in an announcement next week. Ben and I would be making that announcement. It's called the Todalarity. So if anybody is listening, it's going to be the first time you ever hear about it. And it's been in the oven for about maybe 67 days now. We would be announcing something called Todalarity, which is Singularity built on Toda. So why would you want to do this? In all due respect for a lot of researchers that are out there, I feel that they've been constrained researchers trying to fly a boat, metaphorically speaking. It gets people to feel a little bit less defensive when they hear that example, that if you have, right now, if I come in to Robert and say, Robert, here's 5,000 aerospace engineers, the top aerospace engineers on the planet, top, top, top. Here's $2 billion, US dollars, not Zimbabwe dollars, US dollars. And here's a trip that we take together to Miami. And we point at that the cruise ship that has 3,500 bedrooms. And I say, Robert, you've got 2 years. You got to fly that cruise ship the same way airplane flies to Paris and back. We all know what's going to happen in 2 years. This is when it's constrained research. This is when the requirement is intruding on specifications. Every software engineer would know what I'm talking about here. It is fucking frustrating. Every software engineer is like, oh my God, why do they want me to solve it in a ledger? But if you free them, tell them what you want to do. Take them back to 1974. What would they do? Perhaps then they start realizing, oh, well, that's why you guys figured it out in Toyota, because you had the advantage of not having to be constrained with this product. Thank you. We're not saying that what I'm saying here, there is no attempt from anybody from anywhere in the Toyota team. There's over 150 people right now working in the entire Toyota ecosystem that can claim that they are smarter than people out there and will never do that. And if they do, they wouldn't be working with us. So all we're saying is that we give a lot of credit to the people that they're working so hard to solve this, but maybe that constraint is not getting them to see something. And we want to collaborate and work with everybody. So, yeah.
There you go. So it's a blockchain, not blockchain.
Well, it is actually blockchain, but it's not a ledger based blockchain. So you don't depend on ledger. So, I mean, the blockchain, during a block of time, there's certain events that are happening, and we're able to do temporal coupling between those events and do the hashing on them and build something that's called Merkle tree. But for those that they're not very technical, those events that are happening in that block of time, there's a method in the computer to actually take representation of those and chain them with the next block of time as time goes. That is what the blockchain is. It could use a ledger the same way like my mom or my dad can use like the vacuum cleaner. Does not mean that my dad is a vacuum cleaner, right? It's, we can just use it. Sometimes.
Man. You're an interesting guy, man. I can see you having a cigar and some drinks and just picking your brain on stuff. It would be an interesting night. So what, you know, you've got, you know, umpteen different companies you've started. You said three, possibly four have been successful. That's three or four more than a lot of people will ever do. So what makes you do that? Why didn't you stop with when you hit it out of the park with the first one? Why'd you build the second, the third, the fourth, the 15th?
I came out of the crypto closet about 4 years and 2 months ago. And since then, I started opening up a little bit more about certain things about my life. And frankly, 11 years, 3 months, 2 weeks, and 4 days is when I actually got out of anything, any system that ever exists in the financial world. I don't exist in any single financial institution, period, nowhere. I don't exist anywhere. And people that they came close to me through the years, I had to be, you know, fully transparent and give full disclosure, but they didn't really come out publicly and said that I left this world. Although I still exist, but I left. And there's a reason why I left, and I continue not to talk about the details of how I operated for this long and how I'm able to operate many companies and many institutions, so on and so forth, without having to be part of that system that is abusing its own power to do the thing that was supposed to be service for people. And there's a message there. And when we're ready, we're able to get that message across and tell folks that we don't need a service layer to come in and take over the dependency layer. Let's keep them separated. Let's keep the dependency layer. We're able to build a phenomenal dependency layer with a lot of security by design. And somebody wants to provide service, call themselves financial services, that you opt in to use them one day, opt in not. Somebody wants to provide the telco service that you opt in to use them, opt in not. You can do that at your own, you know, risk, and never have to depend on them, never have to witness in one of the best nations in the world 1,000 people per day that they get false positive and get their account and everything frozen in their life. False positive. That's a crime against humanity in one of the best nations in the world. Can you imagine what's happening in the 70% of the world? How can we evolve if this is the infrastructure that we depend on because, oh, well, it didn't happen to me, so it's okay. No, this is not how we evolve. I think we all owe it to each other when we know certain things to do it better and to do it for a reason to get it, pass it on to next generations to be a lot better than it was for the previous one. So gotcha. I play my role. I can't, you can't just sit and not do anything about it. You gotta keep working on it. I guess it's, you know.
I mean, that's pretty incredible. So you've opted out of the financial systems that people use every single day. So for that whole period of time, were you like trading baseball cards for like, you know, for food or what were you doing?
There's a lady who decided to start writing a book on that and she signed every single thing. And I'm like, I don't really need to sign anything, but she's like not going to tell anything until it's time to disclose to the world and to be ready. And she's basically writing the details of how it can be done. So telling the actual how can just like, you know, implicate a lot of people that they actually need to do it that way and whatnot. I don't really need to. I can actually like have an actual legal identity that I could walk into any financial institution and they have the policy procedures and so on and so forth, and they have they're regulated to accept me. It's not like they're not going to, but there's some folks that they are not being accepted. They're false positive or whatnot, and then I think taking a stand with them and trying to work on something that can turn a dependency thing that people they need money to live. It's not like, you know, you can live without money. No, you need oxygen to live. You need water to live. You need food and shelter that you cannot get without money. And having certain entities that they have the right to use that as method of control is not something that we would ever tolerate. 20 years from now, if somebody's going to be listening to this, be like, oh yeah, that's like, you know, slavery back. Slavery was legal back in the days. And people would born like, oh, okay, I'm slave. My job is to find a master. Fuck that. We can't accept that. And we live in a world that we have to evolve to something that is a lot better for next generations. And the more you know about it, the more you feel responsible, the more you're capable, the more you feel responsible. Combine those two.
Incredible for humanity if you're able to do it, right? So, yeah, I mean, with 15 different companies, though, you know, it's like you must have been like Oz behind the curtain, you know? I mean, What drove you to build them all though? You know, what really, you know, what was the motive, man?
I was talking with Ben the other day, like, and we were saying like why I feel this thing that I'm working on now is more like my masterpiece. And another Israeli friend, he says something like every artist attempts to have many sketches before like a masterpiece. So I feel like even the successful ones, I still consider them sketches before a masterpiece. And I feel like this is something that I'm working towards as a masterpiece, because he basically was asking, didn't you feel like that when you were like succeeding at like one of those three or whatnot? And I'm like, no, it's not the same. It's like you kind of work all your life towards a certain goal, but as you're doing something and then you achieve it, you feel good after success. The first one, you just like feel, I can speak about myself, get all stupid and go buy 2 Ferraris and lose all your friends and get only girlfriends that they care about the Ferrari more than, you know, other things. And I mean, your mind, that's what I pointed at, you know.
Sure.
Of course, right? But you know, you learn from going that way to start doing things that can be meaningful, and then you start having certain philosophical things that you stand behind. And one of the things that I stand behind, you're in this life, you don't own anything except time. So that time is what you do with that time. The only thing that you can do is give. You can't take anything. So when you kind of get so convinced in that, you start thinking of methods of like the only reason why you would want to take, you want business to be extremely profitable and so on and so forth, because you want to be able to give more, to give more, to give more. So, you know, it becomes like part of your process that kind of drives you to do more and more and wake up every morning, wake up in the middle of the night to take a board call, 3 a.m. would be whatever I am, and arrive to Korea after 17-hour flight, 14 hours and 3 hours, which is total 17 hours, and then have to jump into series of meetings. And, you know, we have like two offices in South Korea and a research center there. So I kind of go there quite often and go all over the place. I mean, I sleep in 11 cities every month. So it's...
You say it so casually. Yeah, I sleep in 11 cities every month. Yeah.
Dude, I mean, it's very hard on the body, on the soul, on your relationships, on your families, on all of the stuff. But when you have a certain conviction that you feel that like we're advancing, we're getting closer to something that we can all be proud of, it keeps you going. It keeps you going.
Right. Yeah, I think it was beautiful when you said, you know, the masterpiece isn't done yet. So, That's right. It's a beautiful way of looking at things. What's some of your background though, man? Like, you know, not everybody wakes up and gets so deep and so philosophical like you, right? So how did you get this way, man? What, you know, like it wasn't schooling, right? I mean, your parents, what made you just completely be different, you know, from the rest of, you know, people, man? People don't talk like this. It's incredible. Most people don't. What made you this way?
Well, I think it starts with like a series of unfortunate events that kind of like build this kind of stuff. And I refer to things like I grew up in most of my childhood in a bomb shelter. It was during the war in Lebanon. And I mean, it's not like I'm exaggerating. People that from that city, they, you know, it's either that, you know, you kind of lose half your family through that war or whatnot. And it's ugly, you know, you see people killing each other and whatnot. But then there's like always a moment where things like get like to really hit bottom when I was 12 years old, my parents sent us to this like French school where you study the freedom of liberty and freedom of thought and so on and so forth. Meanwhile, the Syrians at the time occupied Lebanon and they didn't believe in this kind of stuff. Definitely not that regime at the time that they're like, what? Freedom of expression? You know, no way. So a bunch of kids, you know, started the militia that my parents didn't even know about to kind of like fight and build some sort of resistance and against the Syrians and against all of that nonsense. And because we believe in like the liberty, we believe in the French Revolution, we believe in, you know, the American dream and all that. And then they find out about it before my parents do. They come and surround my house at 1:30 in the morning, one of the nights. Was like, yeah. Without necessarily getting into too much details, was like one of, not one of, it is the worst night of my life. So it turns out the best thing ever happened to me, because if not for that, my family would have stayed there. I probably would have become like the Che Guevara of Lebanon. But it said, right now, I feel like I have the opportunity and have the privilege to do things that I can help every single Homo sapien if they choose to, as opposed to doing things that can only help a certain group. And I think if anybody is listening, they feel that they can relate, perhaps it's a time to really think to do a major move and get to a place where you're able to do things that you, people, anyone in the world can choose to benefit from the things that you do. It's a fucking fabulous feeling. So, you know, so that's like one of the things that, you know, incident after series of incidents. And then you end up, you know, move to Canada at the time, to Montreal. And then myself, I moved to California and then ended up moving back to Canada and back to California. And then right now I'm based in San Francisco, but I kind of like travel all over the place. And I just, feel that I failed by induction. I should declare that I'm a bad husband, but at least I try to be a good father type of thing. So it's like, you know, like if on a personal level, like people, they have to, it's just like you do suffer a lot from like family perspective and so on and so forth to kind of keep on working with that mission. But that's having that kind of childhood and having that kind of upbringing, you think that you can move to the next thing because you're like, I was like so into physics and math and, you know, passionate about the stuff after leaving, you know, Lebanon, and you get into computer science and you're like good about it. And then you see something like September 11th and it kind of hits you that, like, holy shit, the stuff that they were fighting us back there, you escape, you come here, and then they come after you here. And then a friend of mine said that this is the worst thing about this, that our immune system is going to be worse than that attack itself. And then my search friends had cryptography, and then, you know, kind of got me into having that life that I'm hoping it can, all the work can add value to people at some point, to everybody, hopefully, you know. So
yeah, no, it's an incredible story. I mean, you know, especially, you know, how you turned out versus how you could have, right? So you kind of want the Dalai Lama approach versus, you know, kind of the dictator approach staying there in Lebanon. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty incredible, man. What's some advice you got for people, man? You know, people in general that, you know, want to be better. They want to be better humans. You know, they want to succeed in life, stuff like that.
Well, one of the advices that I tell folks that not to get stuck on things that they can be extremely meaningful, sometimes getting too attached to a certain project or certain team that they are, they just like turn to be like whatever negative things. You need to admit your failures to get to success. You need to fail fast. You need to know if you're able getting into startup, you hear it all the time, it's not easy, it's hard, but how hard it is, it's just, it's one of those things where it's like harder than you could imagine at the time that you say it. And if it's not, it's not hard. It is harder than what you can imagine at the time saying it. So just think of that and think like, do I want to get into, or want to actually do it? And if you do, just make sure that all the other people that are getting in it, they also know that. It makes it a lot better, because 50% of startups that are out there, they fail because of misalignment of founders or people they had. Oh, well, why am I going to work like more 12 hours a day when you're working only 8? And people, they have, you know, misalignments on that. So I think, like, you know what you're getting into. Don't get stuck over little things. Fail fast. Don't be afraid of failure. Be afraid of not trying.
Yeah. Well said. What do you think, like with Jeff Bezos, like he had that long period of non-profitability, right? There was, you know, a long, long time where he went from just working by himself, you know, to growing it into the empire it is today. But all those years where he wasn't profitable, would the average person, you know, have failed or quit, you know, or when you say fail fast, you know, is it, if you have, you know, kind of a vision, you kind of know where you want to go and you know it's going to take a long time, that's cool. But if you're just kind of struggling along the way and hopefully one day it'll be there, what do you say to those people? Like, you know, how fast would somebody like that you expect to fail? If that makes sense.
Well, yeah, 100%. Actually, Jeff Bezos, like maybe 10 years ago, somebody said, like, who's your favorite CEO? And I said, Jeff Bezos. And 5 years ago, and I said, Jeff Bezos. And people, they're like, your character is totally different than Jeff Bezos. Why would you like this guy? And I have a lot of respect for Jeff Bezos. And it's just the fail fast is more about the actual hypothesis that people build and not necessarily about, like, the mission or the goal. That you never ever want to fail. Like, this is more like you have a certain goal in life, you want to achieve that goal. There's certain things you need to do. If you get stuck in one thing that you try, certain hypotheses that cover 98%, and that takes, you know, let's say 6 months, but the next hypothesis covers the 2%, it's going to take a year. Fuck that. Try something else. Keep trying other things. You see them. That's what I mean. It's like in the actual iterations in you have a limited time. Like I said earlier, you know, like all you have in this life is time. You don't have anything. Anybody who's listening, would they think that they own something? Think again. We're in fucking blockchain here. We know what you own. There's the time. There's the block of time. In each block of time, the object belongs to a single device. Okay. This is what the whole thing, like with Torah, every block of time, the smallest thing that your computer has is the actual network packet that has a unique number universally in Torah. It's different than and that can only belong to a single device in each block of time. Okay. And that you're here on this planet, and then you're one day you're going to die. And you might borrow things, but all you can do is that in this time, what are you doing this time? What are you giving? That's what remains. And I think it's extremely important for people to realize that, and which goes back to liberty aspect too. And if you don't have the liberty, you won't be able to have the privilege to have that. And that's why I'm a huge believer into liberty, into privacy, and to not turn yourself into product. We, Homo sapiens, turn cows into products. Let's please not turn other Homo sapiens into products. When folks working for large companies, and in that event that you were in, I gave example to people, and there's an article that I'm writing, which pill would Mark Zuckerberg give his daughters? Is it the Facebook pill or the decentralized pill? And what I mean by that, that this device that you all put in your pocket, at some point is going to have 8 billion times more intelligence than you. It could be in 10 years, in 20. It doesn't change the fact that it's going to have 8 billion times more intelligence than you, possibly 8 billion times more intelligence than all people combined on the planet. Will it look like this? Or will it be a pill you take every Friday? It's likely to be a pill you take every Friday. Will you take that pill? I asked the audience, I said, raise your hand, any one of you, please raise your hand. You don't have to tell me which entity. If you trust a single entity, it could be your mom, that could have control over this pill, but promise you that they won't, but could. Would you be comfortable to take that pill? Please raise your hand. Not a single soul raise a hand. And then, would you give that pill to your children? As opposed to, would you have the option at that time, which is the thing like with, because they were, I was asked about to talk about like what's Solidarity doing? Like if you're talking about all of these altruistic things and you say that it needs to sustain itself, how is Solidarity gonna like be sustaining itself? He said, it could be a company building a pill that came in and joined the Solidarity, the whole decentralized AI thing. And that pill is fully decentralized in the setting of what it does. Like the host can control it and no one else. Now, it's a rhetorical question when I say, which pill would you take? Which pill would you give your children? And then that article would be, which pill would Mark Zuckerberg give his daughters? Can it be the Facebook pill or the decentralized pill that has security by design, autonomous decentralized settings that no one can control but the host?
It's an incredible scenario. Yeah. And, you know, just to kind of go back where you said we're all just given blocks of time, right? What do you think when our time runs out? What happens, man? I'd love to see, you know, your thoughts on that because, you know, you speak very different from most. So when our time runs out, when we die here on Earth, what do you think happens?
I don't know any evidence of what happens to us on an individual level, but I truly believe in something that I don't have the proof yet, but some listeners might have the similar belief, is that we have our own individual, we're more like a node, but then there's something that is common between us. And I'm not talking about the subconscious, there's subconscious, but there's something that is common to all of us. And it's like a single entity, a single mind between all Homo sapiens. That's, you know, what I believe. So it doesn't matter if you at an individual level live and die, this whole thing is living. And for the first time in history, as far as we know, this species that is called Homo sapien has the opportunity to create something that could outlive us. I mean, we've been on the planet Earth for 200,000 years. 200,000 years, that's it. Planet Earth has been around for 5 billion years. For the listeners, to put things in perspective, if it's a year of your life and you got like a little rash here, and you scratch it, that's the life of a Homo sapiens on Earth, if you are Earth, you know. That's it. So, but those Homo sapiens, we, listeners, you are, I am, Robert, everyone, we have the opportunity to do something that is unprecedented, that never ever exists on planet Earth, as far as we know, that we can create something that can outlive us. And that is something that, you know, some people refer to it as AI, some people refer to it as technology. It can travel at the speed of light. It can travel across the universe, or perhaps can offer the ability to transcend into it and so on and so forth. We can do phenomenal things with that when we're not going to exist on this planet. And if anybody think that Homo sapiens were going to exist on this planet for eternity, that person, with all due respect, is probably delusional. Like, we've only been here 200,000 years. Okay, so we're not going to be here forever, but we have the opportunity to create something that can outlive us, can spread over the universe, can help us discover a lot of things, can get into a lot more intelligent than we are, perhaps get to interact with other intelligent things that can coexist that we can't necessarily see or comprehend, and so on and so forth. I mean, I'm not going to start like saying examples because people think like, okay, this guy's crazy saying like the tree could be more intelligent than us. Like, I'm not going to give you those examples, but nobody can see if the sun, for example, when it's actually shining the light, it's actually a communication device sending certain things that we're not even, it's encrypted, we can't even see. We can't even tell or comprehend certain things, but imagine we get to be a lot more intelligent that we're able to get there, but we're living inside the machine. So we have that opportunity to create that, and we shouldn't miss on that. This planet's been around for 5 billion years. As far as we know, we have this opportunity. Guys, this is like a tremendous, it's like we can all have basically Homo sapien, we can create something. No one else did. No other species did on this planet. And that's, I think, extremely important for us to do and do it right. But from now until there, to get there, let's make sure that we don't enslave people that they live on this planet Earth. Let's make sure we don't do that.
Incredible. So what do you do? You know, do you have some kind of hidden talent, some kind of skill, you know, something that maybe the world doesn't know? Maybe you can speak, you know, 300 different languages. Maybe you can, you know, jump, you know, tall buildings in a single bound. Maybe you're a classically trained pianist. I don't know. Do you have some kind of hidden talent or skill?
Not really. I guess I'm just normal from that perspective. I think there's something that I notice a little bit more than other people that I kind of, and people, they tell me, they know me, that I just, when I meet people in real life, I'm able to sense certain potential that they have. And potential on its own is not sufficient for people to get to a lot of things, but I'm able to sense that. I'm able to see their unfair advantage sometimes faster than they can see it. You know, so repetition, I've kind of noticed that. And they tell me years later, it's like, oh my God, like you've had this thing, you told me this when you saw me or whatnot. Like, so I feel that if there's a gift that I cannot explain, it's probably that. But if I were to talk to people that they kind of interpret, like Steven Pinker, if I were to have the conversation with him, that he's going to have a scientific interpretation of what's actually happening in my mind, of how I'm able to discover that and whatnot. I don't have the time to kind of discover that. I just do it. And to me, it seems like natural. To a lot of people, it seems like magical. So if I were to say anything, it's probably be that. That's it.
There you go. Yeah, so instead of like a talent scout for like baseball or football, you're a potential scout. So that way you can find the,
hey,
find
I'm
the
gonna best use,
in people.
Can I use that?
There you go.
In the word of that? Thanks, man. I like it.
Awesome, cool. Man. What's a book that, you know, people just have to read? Something that was super important to you that, you know, shaped your life, or you just, you know, thought it was, you know, crazy important?
Sapiens. Yuval Noah Harari, another Israeli fellow. And for any Lebanese who's listening, or anyone from the Arab nations, and they feel like, oh my God, like this guy is like so much in love with Israelis and this and that. Yeah, I do love Israelis, and I love Arabs, and I love Japanese, and I love Chinese, and I love all kind of people. I don't have any distinction. Okay, so yes, please, I do. So, because sometimes people, they kind of like message me like, oh, you know, like, you come from Lebanon, you shouldn't disrespect. Like, no, if you are Homo sapien, you're allowed to love all other Homo sapiens. So yes, I do. And Yuval Noah Harari is my favorite writer now. It used to be Steven Pinker before, and he's also Jewish. And yeah, I mean, I love people.
I'm telling you, anybody that goes to Israel, you know, it's going to be tough not to love it there just from the food. So it's the most incredible food in the planet, right? So it's awesome. Yeah. Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, you name it. Incredible food. Love it there. So Now let's say that you're president of the world for the day, right? You can make any law that you want. You can change anything that you want. What would you change? What law would you make? You know, basically you could do anything that you want for the day. What would you do?
I would enable, I mean, I've never really thought of that. So for me to think of that like that quickly, it's probably going to be a stupid answer, but I'll try to give my best. I try to give people the ability to have complete freedom of expression, complete freedom of expression. I mean, this is the word complete is important here, because the worst kind of censorships, when it's an internal censorships, when people, they're just saying things because it's acceptable, because it can't be heard, because it's, you know, but imagine you get that liberty. And I really think if people, they get that, they may not necessarily stop after that day. They might feel like, holy shit, it's so addictive. And I tried it for the day. I want to keep it, you know.
Awesome, man. And then I guess last question for you, man. So if tonight was your last night, you know, what are three things you would want the world to know about you, you know, today?
If I were to answer without lying and without implicating other people, that I think I would skip one and I'll say two other things. It's okay.
No problem.
I mean, for now, it's just, it's like a, you're kind of putting me on the spot here, but it's, yeah, I mean, so I want to tell the world about two things about me that they don't necessarily know, out of the three things, right? So one thing is, I did intend to only, in my, until I was like 13 years old, I only intended to help Christian people from Lebanon because I was Christian. And the second thing that I want to tell, that I came to phenomenal realizations that I can do things that can help every single Homo sapien on the planet, which I've kind of alluded to. But I, if those are the two things that I just want people to leave, just like the feeling that you'd get if you get to that is unprecedented. I urge every single Homo sapien to try to get to that feeling. You would feel something magical that you've never, ever felt before.
Incredible, man. Incredible. So, Tufi, I really appreciate you coming on, you know, kind of opening up, sharing with us, you know, all the cool stuff that you've done, all the stuff you're trying to do for the world. It's incredible. I'll make sure that I get the links out to all your sites so people can find you, follow you, see it all these different conferences, man, and just, you know, kind of follow your life's work, man. Thanks a bunch for being so human.
Thank you so much, Robert. Pleasure meeting you. And thanks for all your audience. And you guys are awesome people. Let's keep going. We are very, very close to get there.
Got it. I'll see you soon. All right, God bless. Thank you. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Huge thanks to Tufi. I appreciate everything you're doing for, you know, humanity, right? For everything you're doing for the blockchain space and just being, you know, a good dude, man. So keep in touch and keep us posted on all the cool stuff that you're doing. Hey, peeps, just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beatles shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beatles and his guests. Robert Beatles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beatles on YouTube, and owns several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beatles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right. God bless you. Love you. Till the next one. Talk to you soon.